Blog Talk Radio.
We're shy of one horse.
You brought too many.
Thank you.
Time to fire up the buffet, everybody. Welcome to another Hump Day special. I think you're going to need it since today is 420, if y'all know what I mean. Welcome to Soul Tree Radio and the Raw. I'm your host, Michael Lewis Ingram, DJ Honeycomb, and as always, it's good to be in the house with you. Soul Tree Radio and the Raw, proudly sponsored by BASNNewsroom.com and the Assassins on the Black Athlete Sports Network. You know the good shit. The who, what, when, where, why, and how, right now, and www.BASNNewsroom.com. Shout out to the members of the Brother Man Network, wherever they may be. Radio Reggie in Richmond, Virginia. D. Orlando Ledbetter in Philadelphia. Fred Wittit, the professor, in North Kakalaki. Faith Building Exact. Pat Freeman, the mighty Obad, doing his Obad do. Coming from the no place, going to the nowhere. Providing us with valuable info. Hopefully we'll speak to Obad as we get closer to the annual meeting of the Liars Club, also known as the NFL Draft, where we will hear more bullshit than Congress be laid down, and the rest of the fellas and gang when we get our opportunity to. Now, I must also, with heavy heart, say I dedicate this show to my friend Ulrika Turner, Nima Isner. She's no longer with us on this plane. Hopefully she's not cussing at me too much from above. Love to her family, Jasmine, Binks, Alex, Maya, and everybody else. Sending you love from on the other side of the world. I'll see you guys soon, one day. And you know you got a new angel, so you know she's going to be looking out for all of us. Having said that, we move on. Let's go around the world in 80 seconds. Now, apparently, the so-called January 6th committee is getting more involved. They're going to be talking to more people, and folks have to come on the stand and admit what they do or don't know. All that's well and good. But in our business is the business of asking the right questions as opposed to just questions per se. Now, I have with me, as always, the bad man from the East Bay, Gary Norris Gray, and my colleague, Radio Reggie, from Richmond, Virginia. Gentlemen, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
I got you loud and clear.
All right. So, gentlemen, and Tony McClain is in the mix, as we have four on pop. Having said that, you know, in our business, we ask questions all the time. And in our business, the questions who, what, when, where, why, and sometimes how is journalism's version of A-E-I-O-U and sometimes why. There are vowels. And you know you need vowels to make sentences. You need the right questions to make ideas. And what has always bothered me since this so-called January 6th committee has come into the mix, that nobody really is asking the questions that should be asked. You know, in Canada, they have a show called W5, which stands for obvious. But the W5 factor has not been made regarding January 6th because it would be real simple to get to the heart of the matter, as in who is responsible for this fucking nonsense on January 6th? What predicated the chaos that ensued? Where are these motherfuckers that were responsible, and why aren't they in fucking jail? When did all of this fucking occur? Why did it happen in the first fucking place? And how the fuck are we supposed to ascertain what goes down in all this after all this has hit the fan? Gentlemen.
White privilege. Yeah.
How about that?
Also, Michael, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction.
Yes, Dr. Gray.
So when President Obama put it in the Bible, you knew it was coming. You knew it was coming. Only a matter of time, but you knew it was coming.
Well,
America is a racist, sexist, homophobic, disabled state.
Doesn't make it a bad place.
To undo all those things, we'll be here forever.
True. Well, considering all that's been said, ultimately, somebody's going to end up either lying or telling the truth at one point. And what's going to happen when they get under the click lights? Now, we know in the NFL draft, those motherfuckers are lying their asses off from Jump Street. And they have some culpability. So they're not going to pay for a lie. Will these motherfuckers pay for their lies? That's the question.
Representative of Michigan, who made a statement this morning.
Yes, she did.
And what she said is a nail on the coffin, exactly.
Yes, she did.
And that's what we need more people like her to say. Exactly what America needs to hear.
But in all due respect, Gary, and all due respect, Mike, when you get a chance, my man Dr. Leon, he talks about how there's a group called the Blue Dog Democrats that are the watchdogs to run keep the moderate Democrats in play and the progressive out.
Yep.
Now, just give me two minutes real quick. When you got bunch of gutless Democrats that are sitting up here and just only care about their own turf, and they're not trying to do anything to expand. Case in point, when you had Kamala Harris make the comment, there's no racism in America as vice president, we know that dog whistles were signed to say, look, nigga, we need you to chill the hell out because we got to keep these white folks happy, number one. Number two, when you have the people up in New York that's supposed to be so hot and heavy for the treasonous traitor to be brought down. We ain't heard a fucking thing since this clown has been out of office and Joe Biden been there. Number three. Let me finish. When you got Nancy Pelosi attacks the squad, and then when the Republicans make their checkmate move and she has to walk it back, you got to understand something, gentlemen, in my opinion, just my opinion, and I know, God bless, I know our queen has made her appearance to the degree of ancestors. And God, I wish Cheryl was here so we can go back and forth. But when you got a bunch of gutless Democrats that are over the goddamn place, and you got Merrick Garland that's supposed to be in charge of the Justice Department, not doing a fucking thing. But yet when you see black folks standing there and clearly get slaughtered by the police over and over again with no warrants and walking in, that tells you right there that corporate America and white America are still worrying about a black nation. Because they don't give a fuck about us on both sides of the fence.
That's the one thing that is truly consistent. Everybody knows that the world's getting darker. And ain't a fucking thing they can do about it. How they will regulate trying to logically argue that we need to maintain the status quo is going to be the question for later. And they know that they don't have a feasible answer that makes sense across the board other than fucking genocide. But what do I know? You know, bottom line in all of this, it'd be interesting to see how far they go, because as far as must-satisfy Negroes by cable is concerned, they really ain't saying anything. And politics-wise, Republicans, Democrats, they're both full of shit. So we know there's more nonsense to come, and I would rather just stick with the Liars Club that's happening right now, and that's the NFL draft. However, we have other business to take care of sports-wise, and Tony, the report card for the first week of the USFL, I would have to say they get a passing grade. What say you?
Yeah, I'd say like about a B- or so. The level of football was definitely decent. It was, you know, it was a lot better than I thought. The ratings, it depends on who you listen to, because you have one faction that's saying they drew about as much as the XFL and the Alliance did its first week.
Okay.
And now, if you go by social media, you know, they had like almost 3 million hits over the Saturday and Sunday span. You know, the Saturday game was probably, you know, the Saturday game probably got a little bit more because it was in prime time. It was the home team playing.
Can I throw something at you, T? When other means of watching entertainment, like a lot of people do TV and like you do yourself with cable and non-cable, how can you really count the numbers? Because I'll be honest with you, I forgot the shit was on.
This you can actually get the numbers because for the first time since basically Super Bowl I, you had two major networks, you know, doing the game. Both games was on Fox and it was on NBC. So in Saturday's vein, you could do the numbers. Sunday's a little bit different because you had a mix. You had now there was supposed to have been three games played on Sunday. They had a weather issue where the night game, which was scheduled for FS1, got pushed Monday. It can be done. It's just it takes a little longer. Full disclosure, I think you guys know I used to work at Nielsen Media Research.
Exactly.
The folks that still do the number crunching for TV ratings, more so for the networks as opposed to the cable. But there are ways now where they can judge cable. It just takes a little bit longer because even though, you know, cable's been out there for a while, we're all used to stuff on the network. So it was sort of a mixed bag. Actually, this is just my own opinion. I think the Sunday night game being moved to Monday night actually helped them to an extent because it gave them a little bit more primetime exposure, albeit on cable. Now, they were right in the middle of the NBA playoffs starting in earnest, especially on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And apparently they held their own against the 8 o'clock game. I think it was the opening round of the Warriors and the Nuggets. They apparently, numbers wise, you know, I think they wound up getting like a 3, and the basketball wound up getting like about a 3.5. Matter of fact, as an aside, Nielsen released that the NBA had its most watched season during the postseason. I'm sorry, during the regular season this year, for the most watched season in 3 years. I was actually kind of surprised at that, but I I think it just sort of speaks to sort of where the NBA. Although I saw something funny on social media today, and it said since LeBron James is not in the playoffs, ESPN is canceling the NBA playoffs because them and their bloodlust for him. You know, now that they can't talk about it, it's sort of like, damn, we got to do some work now. So I thought it was interesting, but yeah, on the whole, and look, I will admit in regards to the USFL, I'm a little biased because I'd like the spring ball. I liked the AAFL, and I also liked the XFL, the brief times that they were there. I am hoping that the USFL is given the opportunity because, again, if we're just talking football is okay. You know, and look, there's going to be the morons out there that will say, well, it's not the NFL. Thank you, Captain Obvious. Of course, a first-year league is not going to be a league that's been around 102 years. You're up all night thinking about that, huh? But that being said, it'll be interesting to see what happens. You know, the subsequent weeks will play out. You don't want to go too ham on the first full week, but the subsequent weeks we'll see. Now this week they have a Friday night game, two Saturday games, and a Sunday game. So, and I think at some point they're going to do like East-West. Not so much East-West because all the games are being played in Alabama, but they're going to basically have a late and early game on a Saturday and a Saturday and Sunday at some point. Mm-hmm. But right now they're, I enjoyed it. And like I said, I'm biased because the thing I liked the most, there wasn't the pretentiousness of the NFL. That should be the allure. Now, look, there are some people who are just who are willing to worship at the tit of the NFL no matter what. And those folks, those are not the folks you're trying to get. You are trying to get the non-NFL fan or just the football junkie who will just watch football, no matter what level that it's being played at. So, again, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I'm not going to lie. I don't think I'm wearing pom-poms when I say this. I hope they do well. I really do. I hope they do well.
Michael, this is really about the XFL has 8 teams.
Yes.
The XFL has 4 black head coaches.
Yes.
You've already got two in the USFL as well.
Yeah, you do.
Gary, I got a question. Hey, Gary, I got a question for you. Okay, we've been seeing this for hundreds of years since the NFL, from the Fritz Pollers all the way down to the Art Shells and a plethora of other coaches. But, in my humble opinion, and just like Damani Jones, and shout out to that brother with his show on HBO. I didn't see until I went to YouTube, and I said, "Oh shit, I gotta start watching this brother." He ain't got no cut cards. I mean, he come at both sides with a blade. But again, Gary, here's my question: when you got black general managers, that as soon as they get in the seat, case in point, you had a black-on-black crime in Miami Dolphins, and we saw how that went down. The black general manager, black coach. Black coach turns the team around, and he gets the boot. How in a ham sandwich, again, when you got racist-ass billionaires, just call it what it is, racist-ass billionaires that want to smooth the people who they want, and you can say what you want to say, but it's been proven that these racist-ass guys are going to hire who they want, and ain't a fucking thing we can do about it. I mean, when you move a team out of St. Louis, go to California.
What's going to wind up happening, I think, in Miami is if they don't get off to a good start, guess who I think is going to be the first guy that's going to lose his job? That GM.
That's right.
He put himself in that situation. That's my question again. You got black managers running around going to do what they're told to do. You can't tell me that's not the case. A black general manager wants to keep his job. The first thing the coach of the Green Bay Packers, the general manager of the Chicago Bears went and got a white boy. I mean, come on. General managers, black general managers?
Well, hold on. We got to look at this a little further because we have the Professor Fred Witt in the mix. Let's not forget what Reggie McKenzie did where Gary is in Oakland. Now, a general manager, if he picks 2 or 3 players that are effective, that's one thing. If you pick 5 or 10 players, that's magnificent. Reggie McKenzie picked 26 players. to help fill out a roster in Oakland. They won in spite of the fact that their starting quarterback ain't shit. And
Donnie,
had a 12-inch
follow up with it.
He ain't shit. Carr is shit. But in spite of the fact.
Hold on.
But in spite of the fact that this black man gave 26 guys jobs and they filled those jobs admirably and they helped create a team that had a winning record that went to the postseason, you had one cracker motherfucker. And this is beyond crack. He's a saltine. This motherfucker Gruden came in there and took it all down in one swoop. Got rid of McKenzie, got rid of a Pro Bowl punter in Marquette King, and then started to dismantle a team that went 12-4, that went to 4-12 inside of 2 years. Now, that's spite. That's not saying, okay, we got rid of one crew and we put in a better crew. You took a team that was successful and you took the black man to help them find it and you destroyed it. And now I want to ask the professor, since he's into the mix as well. Now, we all have had turns looking at talent and assessing who can play. But what is more annoying, having somebody that you know can play and you found them and said, stick them in the lineup, or having somebody say, oh, you know, he doesn't fit our style, in spite of the fact that he does the job. And good evening to all. Professor.
Well, good evening to you all. And I don't know one from the other when it comes to the Grudens. I know both of them, in the words of Madlock, both of them are jackasses, so it don't matter.
How you really feel, Professor?
Having said that, I'll just also throw this in. Remember, one of them went to Oakland that epitome of class and all that other bull crap and made them look worse than they were.
Yes.
Well, then wasn't it not a Gruden that went to Tampa Bay?
Yes.
One with the team put together by a black man, and within 2 years, several Pro Bowlers, several Hall of Famers were elsewhere.
Yeah.
Because they wouldn't make his ass. Okay.
And don't forget Keyshawn Johnson talking about how was a jackass he was, and he was vilified. Oh wow! Look who came out ahead.
Having watched a preliminary game and then a couple of games over the weekend and acquainted myself with the USFL. It's beyond me how they keep recycling these white guys. The guy that used to be at Tennessee/Houston has a job.
That's cool. Good Lord, he's fucked up. Yes,
now,
I know. The Michigan Panthers coach.
And at the end, it's beyond me how these, I mean, it's like the recycle white guy of the week, because these morons keep getting jobs, and it's some of the same people or same pool of people who keep hiring them.
Yeah.
it's beyond me how these people or what they call being progressive, what they call being whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me think, okay, well, we can just throw somebody. Because, you know, I listen to this stuff with these various coaches. And having played and coached, I know, okay, the offensive coordinator calls your offense. The defensive, and really with the help of defensive staff or offensive staff, you call the plays, you call the defense or whatever. And no matter what philosophy the head coach may espouse, you know, what can he do? We run a spread, we run a wishbone, we run a veer. Okay, T-Mac, go get, you know, I need a veer team. You go get personnel to run the veer.
Mm-hmm.
You want to run a wishbone? Okay, go get your. You need a dynamic. You need a bull of a fullback. You need two tight ends. One because we're gonna throw the one from the backside, and we're gonna run at the other. Okay,
right.
You put all these things together, and during the game, the coach may do some minor things, but he don't necessarily. Well, you got what two out of 32 teams. I think you got two. What head coaches that you know truly call deeds?
Come on,
that way. A play here,
right.
A play there. That's not calling. That's not calling the game.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting you say that, Fred. Because did you catch the game? Did you catch the opening game at all on Saturday night?
I caught parts of it.
The reason why I bring it up is they did something real interesting, I felt, in the broadcast that sort of, you know, to me that was I don't know if they stumbled on it or if it was something that they did. It's like the third quarter, they basically did not have announcers because, you know, they mic'd the coaches, they mic'd the players. They basically played the whole third quarter where you listened to the progression of the game. It was just like coaches, players, and everything. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it because, you know, I think everybody here knows that I will watch.
History repeating itself. They did that back in the 60s. But
they didn't have the players and I mean the players and the coaches and Mike. I mean, you know, it was basically you would just hear, because even with that announcer meeting that NBC had back in the day, you know, they didn't have the players mic'd and the coaches mic'd or what have you. They literally, like, the announcers only came in, I guess, like when they did commercial breaks or what have you, but they literally, the third quarter, just let the game play out itself. And again, as somebody who watches a lot of sports.
Did they have delays? Just in case somebody says something.
But that's on them. Yeah. There were a few whatever, but you know what? I don't have a problem with that myself. Here's the thing. When you go for all of that coverage, you are invading, not so much invading the privacy, but you choose to go in the inside. Good, bad,
no, that's
and different.
Good word.
So
invading is great. I'm with that.
It's on you. To me, it's on the people who are doing the broadcast to have the 7 seconds to learn. Because look, you're always going to get some. You're always going to get some person who thinks they're bigger than whatever. Because I was shocked and appalled about the language that I heard. And you know what? You know what? That's your there's an on button, there's an off button, and there's a mute button.
If you're so
damn sensitive, turn down the damn I watch a lot of sports with the mute down.
One of the things that I noticed, it seems that either the head coach is either the OC or the DC in this league. I don't think you have two separate and distinct. I think because I know, and I forget which games it was, but I know in one game it seemed like both head coaches were calling play.
Well, that was the opening night game because Mike Riley, who is head coaching for the Birmingham Stallions, the home team for Saturday night. Birmingham had the ball the majority of the game. I take that back. Mike Riley is the coach of the Generals, and the Generals had the ball the majority of the third quarter.
you know, so you heard a lot of him. I forget who was the head coach of Birmingham, but yeah, it was mainly, let's put it this way, you did not hear the guys up in the press box. You basically heard the head coach, the players, and the referees.
Hey,
and to me,
hey, T, can you explain to me how in the ham sandwiches Jeff Fisher there?
Reg just asked the same question. I think Jeff Fisher is a boil on the ass of football, as far as I'm concerned. After the stuff that he pulled with BY, he should never have another job in his life. That being said, I'm not gonna let this one guy mess up the whole thing for the USFL. He's just a surface nuisance as far as I'm concerned.
Let me interrupt here. You also have one Skip Holtz was the other
coach. That was the coach for Birmingham. Skip Holtz, lose older and dumber son.
Yes, indeed, older and dumber. But the Mike Riley factor was not considered. Mike Riley used to coach in the CFL, and in the CFL, it is if the quarterback's not getting it done, Reggie, suit up, your ass is going in. So it's like whoever has the flow to go. And it was shown in that game that the Generals with Trumaine Johnson, I think his first name was Drew Johnson.
Matter of fact, from Texas
Johnson,
Southern,
yeah.
formerly Texas Southern, and last chance U.
Yes, indeed. So he played well, and Riley went with the hot hand, not so much to get a spark, but he was watching how the flow of the game went, and Johnson proved him right. And that's what happens in the CFL because you've got a smaller roster and you've got shorter downs and a shorter offensive mindset. If the offense ain't moving, you got to sit your ass down and bring in somebody who can't get it going. And that's exactly what he did, and the Generals benefited from it.
Mike, here's my question, Mike. How much of this nuance going on in this league that you think the NFL is going to look at and of course, do a case study? They won't implement it right away, but they do a case study on it.
Oh, look, they're going to look. Reg, they stole from the old USFL, not just players. They stole from the AFL. They stole from the XFL. They stole from the Alliance. You notice a pattern here?
Even from the WWE, they stole from them, too.
Look.
Look at the mascots of the various teams, the Generals, the Stallions. Half of the USFL, a good half of the USFL teams that they have now are named after teams that played back in the day.
Matter of fact, that's one of the things that's being fought in. Apparently, there are some USFL stockholders or whatever that are trying to sue the new USFL for using the old names. So it's not being put. The story
good
is not out there as much, but they are trying to. They're trying to sabotage them, and also the XFL. I mean, the XFL basically came out and said this week that they have over the weekend and on Monday, they sent out stuff to all the agents of all the players that are on a current USFL roster, basically saying, hey, we're going to pay more. They're basically saying we're going to be better. They're going to offer more money. They're going to do this. They're going to do because I think the XFL. The current USFL, the players get about, I believe they're saying about 7,000 about 7,500
right.
for the 10 game season with incentives and all the other stuff. Now the XFL is claiming that they're going to be able to double that, and they're going to have better insurance. You know, they're basically this way. There's already folks out there basically trying to sabotage them, and also, they just signed an agreement with the NFL. So in a sense, the XFL is trying to do the NFL's bidding. And don't think that the NFL isn't behind the scenes trying to, do some stuff as well.
$1 million question, T. When do they start signing an agreement with FanDuel? That's the $1 million question.
Oh, it's already there. They don't have an actual contract signed with them, but if you go to their website, it's just, you can bet, you can basically bet till the cows come home. But I will,
that's right.
But I will say this, and again about the broadcast. Now with the XFL last year, they literally beat you. I mean, watching the XFL last year was damn near like watching a FanDuel or DraftKings commercial because the announcers were just pushing the whole thing, whatever. The XFL game, I just used the games for the weekend. They mentioned, they mentioned over under in the spread at the beginning of the game, and they pretty much just was like, okay, that's it. Now let's just talk football. And for the most part, it was like that for all the broadcasts. They would, they made mention of the spread, who was favored, and what have you, but
they were literally counting points.
They literally didn't beat you to death with it. It was more of them trying to, because they have they have a unique set of extra point possibilities in the XFL.
Yeah.
There's the regular kick for 1 point.
Mm-hmm.
There's the going for two, and then I guess there's the thing where it's either
the
10-yard field goal.
You can score from the 10-yard line.
You get the ball from the 10-yard line and you score, you get three. So.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you and there's different interpretations with some of the rules and what have you. But for the most part, to me, and again, this was what I enjoyed, it was about the football. It was about the football more than anything else. And see, to me, that's where the NFL has lost it over the years, because they're so busy beating you to death with so many non-football things. That it gets, it's almost like a 3.5 hour symphony sprinkled in with some football.
Indeed. And there was one thing they did that I really liked. They were promoting their game. Tickets were only $10. And on top of that, you could bring as many as 3 teenagers to the game for free. So, you'll go to the game, you'll eat up the concessions and all the other good shit, but it's only going to cost you $10 to take yourself. So if everybody in this thread was going, that means I got to buy
Michael?
4 adult tickets.
Right. But Mike, I hate to be the bad guy in this, but with COVID-19 going up and these variants, and unfortunately, we as black folks have only been 39% getting inoculated. That's from the health department.
Reg, they're not playing in front of full houses. So, I don't say that to beat them up. I'm just saying, if social distancing and all that other stuff would keep you away from the game, it shouldn't, because plenty of seats are running, and basically, it's probably going to cost you more to get to Alabama than it would to get to the game. to get a game ticket.
Because that was my question. Now I know from watching the news a couple of days ago, we had a bad rainstorm here, real bad rainstorm and all that kind of stuff. And I hear that just north of where Reggie is, they had this thing called a nor'easter.
Yeah, that's right.
It snows. So I understand why they would do that, other than Pittsburgh and New York and all the, in Detroit and all, you know, well, you know, they ain't got no sense no way anyway, so. But you know, think about it now. How you going to build an audience in Alabama with all your teams? Because basically all you
look,
do
they're
is...
taking, they're, the thing, again, I'm, and again, I'm basically what they're trying, they have basically said this is going, they're just looking at this as a developmental league. And the first year, they're going to do it bare bone for the most part. They're going to, you know, they're going to have everything played in one area. And then when year two rolls around, they can get it so that they can play in the because they're not talking about expanding teams yet. Their whole thing, like, because see, they've basically got the eight food groups of whatever, you know, you got New York, Philly, you know, Alabama, you know, places, and you know, the only really big city that they're not in. Or they're not represented is like a Chicago, a Boston, a Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. I think what they want to do, just from an aesthetic thing, the first year they want to be able to make it so that let's get the product out there.
I agree. Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and then afterwards we'll you know expand. And look, They could have sort of taken the easy way and gone to say like Florida or what have you, but you know the brothers there is just as crazy. As a matter of fact, you know there were three games scheduled for Sunday and they had to push the evening game back because of the, as a matter of fact, the afternoon games it was supposed to have been noon, 4 and 7 Eastern. The noon game didn't start until 1. The 4 o'clock game wound up starting at 5, and then they just canceled the night game and they pushed it to Sunday. They pushed it to Monday at 7 o'clock. So they seem again, I'm not trying to be a shill for the league, but I'm not going to lie. I hope it does well. They seem to, let's put it this way. We always hear how the NFL will bullshit you about the whole player safety or whatever.
Right.
You do get the feeling here that, you know, early on that they do actually do care about player safety to at least get started with this.
They seem better prepared. They did.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, they rattled their contingency plans off immediately. They acted on it, and the games went on. And that's what you want. And besides, you know, they waited, 35-plus years for this moment to reestablish, you know, waiting a little bit longer wasn't going to change anything positively or negatively. I think this will work. Right. Spring football definitely has a niche that can be filled.
Yeah.
The USFL was on the way to doing it.
And see, the one other thing I think that you know, because see, one of the big things that you keep hearing, and I know people will be, well, you're going to get all the players. The players are out there. I don't think it's a lack of players.
You got,
if anything, because yeah. And see, again, it goes back to one of our favorite subjects. I think this gives more HBCU players more opportunities to get a chance to play. Now,
currently in the USFL,
what's that?
I don't think they have 20 players from HBCUs. One team,
I think early on, I put out a story. I think right now it's about 12, 15 altogether. But I know the XFL had about the same amount the first year. But again, it's still an opportunity because at the end of the day, with the way the NFL is right now, where they're basically playing two, maybe even three exhibition games, these kids are not getting a chance. They're not getting the look that they would have gotten, say, 5 to 10 years ago.
Now
they got a little bit better opportunity to put something out there on film, so to speak, and go from there.
And T, I'm glad you brought the HBCU aspect and Mike's permission to bring this to the table for two minutes, if I could. It's no secret that, and Professor, I know you're going to shake your head about this, but HBCU.com broke the story on April 16th
that Howard University is going to the CAA in 2023. Now, Virginia State has already added three new sports, being men and women lacrosse and soccer. Virginia Union has already started to accept Hispanics. The only thing about soccer, a lot of Hispanics play soccer. All I'm saying is that the Big South has already taken a big hit with Hampton and A&T leaving, coming to the CAA. Now, Morgan State is probably going to stay with the MEAC, but Delaware State is rumored to be leaving next year in 2023 for a conference up in northern Pennsylvania. Now we have to ask the question, if one of the HBCU's D1s is now getting hit by all ends because of trickle-down effect from conference and alignment, what does this do overall, Professor, for the HBCUs, in your opinion?
Well, for one thing, hopefully it will finally make some of these presidents and ADs understand they got to learn how to raise money.
There you go.
More than chicken dinners and hamburgers and butts in the seat. Now, you got to find some people who can write some checks. And I don't mean, I gave my school $500. No. It's going to, I'm talking about real money.
Like the Amazon money that dropped.
All you all are old enough to understand watching them Medicare commercials, and the one with Jimmy Walker, he can show you about more money back in your. I mean, that's the kind of money you got to start. Because think about it.
That's right.
Okay, let's go back to my analogy of when. Texas wanted Mack Brown back in the day. They sent three or four ladies who were wives of boosters to North Carolina one of the people in the Texas Booster Club said, oh, we let such and so and so, they'll take my private jet and fly up and bring Mrs. Brown down. And, find out what kind of house she wants and, just bring it down and look, narrow it down to two or three. And when she buys a house, back then, this was in the 90s, I think it was like $4 or $5 million for her house. And, and it's her profession. It's his and her house. They pay for it. When he left, he sold it. Come back to North Carolina out of retirement. He came back to North Carolina, and they buy him another house up here on the golf course that probably costs $5 to $7 million.
Mm-hmm.
And see, it also going to take finding somebody that's a bigger jackass than the coach at Alabama to say, The portal and the players being able to make their own money is going to ruin football.
Don't forget Dick Vardell.
It's funny when the slaves finally be able to get a little something, all of a sudden that's the ruinization of American civilization.
All of a sudden everybody's concerned. You know what? Tony was right on this aspect.
Hold on, Reggie.
We got to consider this. HBCU players know, if they don't, they should. Stand on if they don't. That pro teams will only have two games in which somebody can showcase what they can do. On top of that, you've got all these minor leagues, and you got to call them minor leagues now because the farm system is really what they're really trying to aspire toward. You don't have an X number of opportunities to make a first impression. When P.J. Walker went from the XFL to starting for the Carolina Panthers, his money went from $10,000 a game to the NFL minimum, at least, which is $650,000. The odds of him making that were like almost infinitesimal, but he did. And that's exactly what they're looking at. Anybody who's in this situation that doesn't know that, they're shit out of luck. The options are not there. You have to make that impression almost immediately to get looked at. As I was looking at the USFL game with the Houston Gamblers, Coach Sumlin had his front seven on display. They played strong for pretty much most of the game and stopped them, and they pretty much ruled the pit. I don't know how many HBCU players were there in the mix, but they realized that their time to shine is short. Auditions are short. You don't get the opportunity to beat somebody on the other side of the ball who might be better than you or who might not, because they don't care. As Tony likes to say, there's a payroll that must be met. So they may take you for a payroll if the game means you're only going to win $7,500. What they are saying is if you're with that pro contract, you're going to whip a lot of asses to get it. And I don't know if there will be an audience or an apparatus that will let an HBCU player who's just getting looked at just right now to dominate to such a level that he'll get an NFL team interested and say, come on, boy.
Hey, Mike, let me throw something at you and your team, Professor and Gary. Okay.
Yes.
We know that there's a plethora of money from wealthy people, not rich, but wealthy people that were put in the HBCU selected schools, I think, last year, a couple of years ago. And then we hear the horror stories about how university, and again, I go back to Damani Jones on HBU when he talked about how a young black kid did a skit, was going to go to these white schools. And matter of fact, he did a skit where the father got a truck and $30,000 from Alabama for his kid to go there. And when the kid said, "Don't say I'm going to Southern University," this was a skit that was done by Damani Jones. This really happened, but it was a skit done. As soon as he said go to HBCU, your parents was cussing his ass out and think about how they had to give back all the riches. And whether we laugh or not, a lot of that shit is true. See the movie Blue Chips. All I'm saying is that when you've got a lot of these HBCU schools, especially in some of the repairs need to be done, do you put your money in athletics and repair the football field, or do you concentrate on the dorms and try to get them up to stuff? Considering
that's a fair question.
Hey, Reg. How about do both? What the hell's the problem? What's the problem with that? Because, see, here's the thing. Do very white schools. Let me finish. You know, the very same white schools who you worship at their altar, they do both. So why can't you do both? And also to sort of piggyback on what I said earlier, there's nothing wrong with the small checks, but see, why not take sort of the way, remember when Obama ran the first time and basically it was sort of mom and pop where, you know, $10 here from grandma and $20 here from whatever. My thing is I get it. You want to get the big bucks and you should go for that, but don't turn down the small money either. You can't be so whatever that you're just going to, in a sense, no HBCU should turn down any money, no matter how small, no matter how big or whatever. All of it collectively works. I know what Fred is saying in the sense of you want to get them big bucks, and that's absolutely you want to, but don't get yourself caught up in worrying about the small money as opposed to the big money. Just get the goddamn money and do something.
Chimek, you all missed what I was saying. When I say they got to learn how to raise money, that's exactly what I'm talking about. They have to learn.
Yeah, I'm talking about repairing the dorms and a lot of the infrastructure, a lot of these HBCUs, I don't give a how as a perfect example. I mean, hell, they had one building that had mushrooms growing in it. It was someone's pumpkin. That's the kind of bullshit that's going on with administration.
And Red, remember what was going on with Grambling,
with their stuff too.
And remember, also, a bunch of these schools were having accreditation problems as well. So, yeah, we know that there's all sorts of problems, but again, and I don't want to monopolize the conversation. Thing is, and Fred's been saying this forever, all of us have been saying it forever, these guys, you know, forgive me for saying it this way, but I think it needs to be said, these guys are still living in the Chipman circuit when everybody else is trying to move on. You still, you know, you still have to realize, they still don't realize that you can use your athletics to enhance your academics. The very, and I'll say it till I'm black, blue in the face, the very white schools who you try to pattern yourself after do the same. You think Duke doesn't, you know, you think Duke and Northwestern and Stanford don't get a little kitty from their sports to go along with their academics? If you really don't believe that, then you need to, then please help me uninsert your head from your asshole, because they do it. Even
they
the
don't care about that cool called Gonzaga. Gonzaga built the damn school up on athletics.
And you know what? Do we know St. Peter's because of their biology lab or because of their basketball team now? I mean, let's be real about this thing.
Come on.
Let's be real about this.
Listen, we can even go as far as what Buck has been.
The real thing that I say, I hope y'all truly get a grasp on besides the raising the money, is you got to stop treating sports and athletics as if it's
curriculum
activity.
I agree. They look at some places. Look at this as an investment. In the case of Patrick School and Rutgers, they saw the same thing. They said, "We got to put in X million dollars, and we'll profit from this in X amount of time," which is exactly what Rutgers did. Now, Rutgers is not going to set the world on fire from a football standpoint, but I bet you, if you look at their bank accounts, they're doing all right.
Mike, I don't think this is hyperbole, but I bet you Rutgers could fit the bill for the MEAC and SWAC combined.
Easy. That's what I'm talking about. No matter what, they're middle of the road in the Big Ten, but their bank account says otherwise because they're getting paid. They're getting their cut from basketball. They're getting their cut from the conference for football. They're getting their little sum from everywhere. And they realize that they can do this if they invest X number of dollars, which they did. And they made good on their investment.
In order to invest X number of dollars, you got to do what?
Raise X number of dollars. There you go.
And see, some of that is inbred, because going way back, several schools over the years, I know Fisk ran into this at one point. How are you going to justify asking all these rich white people to give you money, and you're going to use it instead of building a science lab, you're going to use it to build a football stadium or basketball gym? Because remember, until 1925, no HBCU had a regulation basketball court. And everybody talked about basketball and how it grew. It grew actually through the YMCA. And when you go back and look at the whole picture, you still got too many former coaches who mean well, great guys, but they're not business people. And this is where the school's got to make a correction. If you for all the good that Dr. McClendon has done down in the SWAC, he is truly is he is only laying foundation now, because with all that had been done in all those years, he finally flipped the script somewhat. But you still got the presidents, and you know, and they brag about having 12 schools now, but you still got so many presidents and chancellors at those various schools who got that old mindset. Well, this is
right.
Just an extracurricular activity.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of the state schools, because see, Grambling and Southern still have not recovered from that jackass they had as a governor a few years back, who just cut budgets. He didn't look at what was needed, and think about it. When he cut budgets, all I call it, what they call the laugh league down there. Louisiana, LSU this, LSU that. Even LSU got hurt in the mix back
Fred, weren't they going through a condition problem too because of that as well?
Most of the whole LSU system had problems.
Yeah.
Because they just went and cut budget. We're not going to spend. Everybody's going to get an across the board, say 10-15% cut. And think about it, LSU is the best endowed school institution in the LSU system and Louisiana education system. If they got hurt, you can imagine how bad Grambling and Southern got hurt.
And then all this jerk
has to think is, we balanced the budget.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And weren't the Mississippi schools going through the same thing as well?
South Carolina, too. South Carolina State almost
shut
down.
Mississippi schools going through the same problem as well back then with the accreditation and stuff?
Most of the Southern schools, North Carolina and Florida, didn't have it as bad. Georgia was okay. But big picture, they all took a hit.
Yeah. Well, Professor, going back to the CIAA, so that's where our heart is. Between Union being a private school and Elizabeth City, Lord have mercy for Elizabeth City, I don't even know how they keep the doors open. I don't know how the CIAA is going to survive. I mean, Fayetteville is doing okay, but a lot of these schools like St. Augustine, Elizabeth City, Shaw, man, they hold on to life support.
Reggie, if you don't raise money, you can't spend money.
There you go. Right. Claflin's doing a hell of a job raising money.
Well, Claflin had their previous president set up a systematic way of putting money into the school and then putting butts into the seats in the school because. You need to read my book I did on Claflin University because, I mean, bless his heart, his wife actually ran a college prep type system for very good students in their system that they were bringing in, and you know, I think it started with like 100 students, and then they added 100 each year and all this kind of stuff. They got scholarships. They got new buildings. Claflin is in far better shape than South Carolina State. And you can actually, as some people will say, you can stand on one campus and spit on another. That's how close they are. Don't mean to separate them. Literally, the two schools are basically an island unto themselves. When you turn in to go to South Carolina State, if you just continue, go to the light and bear to the right, go about 100 yards maybe, or maybe less than that, and you add the entrance of the, you add the entrance to Claflin.
What's that HBCU going to small school D2 that just have a beautiful new gymnasium? What is, I can't think of the name of the school in Florida.
Edward.
What's the name
Edward
of it?
Edward.
Yeah,
Waters.
They got a beautiful, it's opened a beautiful brand new gym. I mean,
and as crazy as it sounds, the guy that's just retiring from Livingstone actually started that process about, I think he's been in Livingstone about 12 years. So before he left to come back to Livingstone, that's where he was. And he, I think he's one of the biggest jerks in the world. But he does understand the use of athletics to the point where he started the process, because it's Edward Waters University now and not Edward Waters College.
Mm-hmm.
So that means we've got graduate programs and that sort of thing.
Well, I'm just tired of these schools fronting.
Well, Gary, you got the answer. All the questions you had, Gary, those are your answers.
Well, hold on. I'm Reggie, I'm tired of all these schools fronting with their administrations saying one thing and their wallets saying another. Everybody knows what needs to be done. Everybody is encouraged by what needs to be done. And we all root for everyone to do well. However, if you got a handful of people whose ass is still in their, is still in the back of their minds that they cannot go forward unless they break off something to the administration, that's bullshit. Extortion is extortion, whether it's black or white. And if they don't know by now what makes something work, then get them the fuck out. Because the long and short of it is, they already know what needs to be done in order for the institution be successful, not just in enriching young minds, but enriching paychecks and enriching bank accounts and endowments, so that they have a little something. All this other stuff is just a circle jerk, and it's annoying to sit here and hear it over and over and over again when they know daggone well they got to stop the bullshit. And as Fred said, if somebody's not in there making money, get somebody who can, please.
You know, because one of Reggie's buddies that he will agree with me about, I've always said I thought that the former head of Hampton was one of the biggest jackasses I've ever seen. But you can't argue with his results. And you see what I mean? I can tolerate your assholery. What's the term you use?
Yeah, assholery. I know what you mean.
I can take all that if I'm seeing results.
For real.
If all you're doing is prospering, and because I got into it with a former chancellor at Federal State. He bless his heart. He had all kind of good intention, but he was also listening to too many of the wrong people. And I ran into him a few years back because they tried to make it like that was a thing between me and his wife. And I said, shoot, his wife and I were schoolmates. I knew her before he did. So if I was going to be a problem, he wouldn't be in the picture. But that was
true.
But beyond that, some things they changed. They were changing the field. And I kept telling him, okay, well, if you're going to do that, we can go find somebody. I mean, I vaguely remember the person that was his development person at the time, and he wasn't doing the job. He knows about it. But, you got to get people in there who not only can but will go out there, put their nose to the grindstone. And you got to, as one guy said, well, why y'all hire that white dude? Because he know white people who got money.
There you go. Listen. Qualifications notwithstanding.
Mike, see, where I live is roughly, it's a little less than 5 miles from Federal State Campus, right? And they're doing a lot of improvements down here, with a chancellor who is suspicious at best, but he has big money contacts. The long story short is, he knows those kind of people, and he's getting the people to put money where their mouths are.
Uh-huh.
And he lives in, there's called, they used to call it the President's Cottage, but it's a house that's probably about 4,500 and 5,000 square feet.
Okay.
Because when he entertains, he needs a place that's going to hold 300, 400, 500 people.
Mm-hmm.
Some people don't understand. That's why the school owns this big house out on Sky Drive. Well, Sky Drive, if he goes walking in the morning, you know, on Sky Drive, he's black, so he might get arrested. Cause he know how many people live. He know how many people live on Sky Drive. Few years back, it was kind of funny. The former chancellor of Civil State,
professor,
he never get arrested. She did.
That's some sobering reality, knowing that even in spite of all this, you got to always look at the X factor, and that's an X factor societally that we can't avoid. I got Patrick Ferran and Mick. Patrick, can you hear us? Live and living color, fellas. What it ain't. Yes, sir.
How are you?
It is.
Before I go further, guys, you know, I want to go back to where we were talking about with these young men. Need to understand the big picture. If we were all of draft age and we're all playing and we have sitting having to hustle through all these leagues, to the USFL, to the XFL, to the CFL, all these other leagues offering us opportunities, if we don't take them, the time factor runs out. All this wears on your body. You can play but so many games for $5,000 or $10,000 or $7,500, whatever the fuck it is. You have to make it upon yourself to understand that the time frame that I have to get this done or else I have to move on. And not enough HBCU players are getting the word that, like they say about pregnant women, their clocks are ticking. We have to be aware that the clocks are ticking, and that if you're going to capitalize on it, you got to put the work in and get it done now, or it's not going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. And just to take advantage of the opportunity. Because, see, that's – look, I used to work for my minor league football team here in Connecticut Giants. And we had a bunch of guys that wound up – you know, they, you know, some of them got, you know, legit pro shots – but a lot of them played on that giant scab team back in 87. And look, in their eyes, this was, you know, this was basically their sort of last shot or their only shot at what happened.
Yeah.
I never hated on them guys that were able to get the opportunity. Now, again, I was biased because, you know, I knew them personally or whatever. But the thing was, the thing to me that's very alluring, you know, we always hear folks talk about, you know, the quote-unquote good old days and, you know, sports isn't pure and all this other stuff. In many ways, a lot of these leagues, like the NFL, I mean, I like the XFL, like the USFL and whatever, it's basically like, you know, like Fred was saying, they're, you know, other than college football, they are basically trying to be – everyone is killing themselves to try to be the feeder system for the NFL. I mean, that's at the end of the day, that's what – you know, that's why you've got the XFL literally sniping at the USFL right now, and they're still and they're still a year away from even putting the pads on. But that's the thing. And see, there's – to me, and I don't know if you guys feel the same way – There's sort of a uniqueness to it because you're watching football or basketball at its purest form. I akin it to, you know, watching like say American Legion baseball or AAU basketball before it got so corrupt. And everything like watching a real high level of high school sports or a high level of college sports, what have you, you know, and again, it's affordable. You can, you know, you don't have to, you know, you don't have to make a small business loan to go watch the game. And,
yes,
you know, you come away, you know, you'll come away with it almost in a better atmosphere than paying the money to watch the NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, and the NHL without the pretentiousness. And to me, that's something that should be celebrated. And especially now when you still got people who are struggling financially because of the COVID, it's a good night out, or is it just something to, you know, something decent to watch
on
the TV? Yeah.
It's a great night out. Listen, my middle girl Leah saw her first professional game when the Eagles came. I spent $400 on those tickets. For that money, I could take everybody on this thread and at least 25 kids to a USFL game and have change left over. That's no mean feat. I mean, that's bottom line.
Can
brass
you give
tack.
Me the press box?
Yeah. Can't get them in the press box, but you don't need to be in the press box. You don't need to be in the press box if you're busy eating cheese fries watching the game. That works. You know, that's good entertainment. That's kind of like the minor league baseball aspect of football. You know, you get to see the sport in its purity, but you get to see it without all the trappings. You know, it's bare bones. And you get to spend the money and say, hey, I saw this, I enjoyed it, I was entertained. If the USFL sticks to their formula, they should work and they should have a firm hold on this niche for a long time. And that's a big if. You know, I don't want them to deviate from where it started.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm biased because I did time with, you know, I've worked in minor league sports for a little while, and yes, there's a fun aspect to it because again, you know, we're frequently talking about, you know, sports entertainment. There's good sports entertainment, and then there's bad sports entertainment.
Yep.
And the thing about it is, there's more bad sports entertainment on a higher level than there is on the lower level, because I think for me, a lot of times if I have if I have the opportunity to go see either a minor league game or a major league game, talking for baseball, I might lean toward the minor league game because of the atmosphere more than anything else.
There you go. That's real, Patrick. We were talking about the USFL earlier. How did you assess the week's first week?
It was okay. They're in the process of trying to work things out. You know, nothing's going to jump out and flash. You know, and there are some things, you know, obviously that were like in proof of form, but it's the first step. I'm not going to anyway over critique them. I've worked in two minor league teams. I worked in World Football League. I was administering an Arena Football League when it first came out in New Jersey. You know, it has its ups and downs. It's, you know, and you take it for what it is. You know, Tony put it best. Take it for what it is. Don't try to make it something that it's not. But take it for what it is and enjoy the game. And I've gotten folks to enjoy Arena Football basically for a long time because take the game for what it is. You know, take out the other aspects of it and go from there.
Because Patrick, the thing is, I wanted the first person that says, well, it's not the NFL, I literally want to drive and go slap him, his mama, his mama's mama, and what have you. Because it's like, of course it's not the NFL. Of course. I mean, that's supposed to be. Yeah, exactly. And if you're using that, this way. If you're using that as an excuse not to watch it or to, you know, to belittle it, that's beyond arrogant. It's actually beyond ignorant, if there is such a word. I'm going to leave that to you. If you can find another word for beyond ignorant, so we can ruffle Mr. Wesley's feathers a little more. But yeah, there is such an arrogance in regards to what it isn't, as opposed to Well, what is there? Is there a world? How about focusing on what it is as opposed to what it is?
How about that? And that's one of the things when you're in a league like this, you have to deal with it even when you're selling it. And that's a whole other story. But, yeah, and that's the approach you should take. Take it for what it is and enjoy it for what it is.
Absolutely. Okay, I'm done with my school box tonight. I'm sitting in the front now.
Okay. I'm going to get one in a minute. But that's another story.
Now we turn the page to the annual meeting of the Liars Club, which will be next Thursday in Las Vegas, or Las Vegas, as you will. Now, one thing I have found truly annoying, and Patrick, please take lead on this, is we already know they're going to hype somebody and they're going to take somebody down. But we're talking about millions of dollars here. Now, in terms of talent, we know there's a couple of brothers who play quarterback who should be signing some big figure bonuses. But we all know there's going to be something coming along where someone will try to say some fucked up shit and mess with the process. What say you, gentlemen?
The one thing I say every year, the week of the draft, the only people that are lying more than the pundits are the folks in the House and the Senate and whatever. And it's not like the gap between the lies is that big.
I want to know what the Niners are thinking
with
Debo. Did you
do that? Yeah, it's funny. It's almost like, and again, I'm trying to be a conspiracy theorist. It's almost like they're trying to sabotage Mr. Dodge before he's given the keys to the kingdom.
Yeah.
He's got the weapons of, he's got one of the best weapons in all the NFL, and all of a sudden now it's like, well, he's not really.
Tony, they're going to the old classic negotiating play. Well, you're really not a receiver. You're really a halfback. They want to pay him halfback money with receivers.
Everybody wants a five-finger discount.
And if Frisco is stupid enough to let them go, they deserve to what they get.
Debo, this was a stupid move in 10 years.
And that's my ongoing argument. Excuse my gentlemen for me getting pissed off. Stop telling all these goddamn quarterbacks overhyped money and spread the fuck around for the people to make a team go.
One of the things I think we keep missing is, as we do our own assessment of what talent is and what talent isn't, granted these other people get paid gugobs of money, but think about it. They're the ones who let the Tim Tebow's and what was the linebacker from Oklahoma thing? Remember, experts said he was going to be the best who ever put on a jock strap. Tim Tebow couldn't do no wrong, no matter how much he jacked up a game.
That's right.
You can just go down the list. I looked at a list I was flipping through the other day, and I saw this list of first-round flops. I didn't even bother to read it because I said, even some of the ones that they say have done good, but they never became great. Because you got quote unquote experts who are picking people who are the best, who aren't the best. They'll skip over all these players who have all this potential and all this kind of stuff, but they don't know how to coach. They don't know how to run a game. And a lot of times you get a quarterback who should be in another scheme, but no, this is what we run,
true.
And he's going to run.
True.
Exactly right. And since there's no longer any Dallas Cowboy fans, was Troy Aikman really that good?
No. Hell no.
And what about Tony Romo? I don't care where it
is.
But see, when you, because you know, one of the things I watch probably a game, at least one full game every day. And one of the things that short knows is, okay, every time a guy makes a play, what do they say? His name, his number, what school he went to, and where he was, where did he go in the draft?
Come on.
They can't explain. A lot of these guys who come from quote unquote nowhere. Mike, you know, like one guy was talking about, oh, Mike Webster. The only person that wanted him was the coach.
Yeah,
everybody
hello.
Else said he was stupid. It's all the, and I said, well, okay. Other than the fact that he ended up basically killing himself because of the stupid helmets, how many centers out there better than him? Oh, Jack Lambert. He was a quarterback in college. They just decided he couldn't play quarterback, so they moved into middle linebacker. And he's too small and springy. Okay. Mm-hmm. But you know, and think about it, the experts. That's what was it, 73, 74 on draft. So
that's
far, 74. Was it five Hall of Famers? One of whom
that's
was
drafted.
Yes,
sir.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But
you know what,
friend? The level of perniciousness doesn't get any worse than the year. I forget which Super Bowl I was covering, but the halftime featured a commercial where Tim Tebow was going to talk about his parents' decision to not abort him. Now, Tebow hadn't done shit yet. From all indications, he wasn't going to do shit. He wasn't going to be shit. But the fact that he was their poster boy kept him in the league, him with the salary, and kept him relevant enough for them to say, we're going to make him part of the halftime entertainment. And even with all of that, he still couldn't get out of his own way because he was so white, he said, I must be a quarterback. And then when he decided to be a tight end, he was too fucking old to do anything about it, and they let his ass go because he couldn't function in that position anymore.
Even that musical genius that was there as a coach for less than a year.
Yes, sir.
Be a tight end.
That's right. Mm-mm-mm. I'm telling you.
Are you talking about
the
Urban? Are you talking about Urban the maestro?
Yep, oh
yeah. Old butt scratcher himself.
Oh, I forgot. Anyway, I'll let that go.
We have gotten to a point where we see they have broken down, as Tony talked about 3 or 4 years ago, how they devalued the running back. Now, the running back won't get any real money. You know, even if he's an exemplary running back, you can forget about that. He ain't getting no more big-time bonus. The money is going in some places where it should, because if anything, a lineman should be worth more than anybody, short of quarterbacks. But, you know, they will spend the money on who the flavor of the month is. And that's where you have these bastards like Kuiper and McNugget trying to gauge the situation and move guys up when they really aren't worthy of being moved up. How many fucking times have either one of these motherfuckers missed on the draft?
Most of the time.
Since it's all speculative,
particularly
on quarterbacks, every now and then you would do that. But the year that Mel Kiper said Seattle's draft wasn't shit, in spite of the fact that they had Bruce Irvin, the cornerback, Russell Wilson, Richard Wagner, and about four or five other players, Kiper gives it an F. what the fuck is this guy talking about? That's what they should have asked. That should have been the next question. Are you on drugs? You don't know a fucking thing about football. But they never asked that question, and that's the problem.
Yeah.
You know,
and again, all those guys started on a Super Bowl winning team.
Started. It was like the Pittsburgh draft. Not as full in terms of filling out holes, but it was a strong draft. And Kiper gives it an F. He didn't know what the fuck he was talking about, and nobody called him on it, except us, of course.
Mike, the biggest problem that I see for this year is the fact that there's equity in terms of player positions that can be filled. There's no, from their perspective, there's no, they would give the boy Willis his credit as the best quarterback in the draft, but that's okay. He don't need to be. He needs to go to the right team. So this draft will be interesting in terms of how it's placed. I started reading it about a couple of days ago, looking at stuff. The positions relative to need, I think, will be in the forefront more this year than in the past. But it is interesting to see where the kid Willis will go to. That's interesting to me.
Yes. I want to see where Willis is going to go. And I'm waiting for the next shoe to drop because they usually wait for a pro workout or the assessment of one of these jerks to say, this guy's really going to be good. I remember the year that Teddy Bridgewater was the number one quarterback in terms of overall skill. Everybody agreed that Bridgewater was going to be the man. And then maybe 2 or 3 days before the draft, someone comes up with some bogus shit about his workout, and Teddy drops from fourth to fifth to what was it? He was the last one in the first round that year.
He was like 20th overall.
Right. It cost him at least $5 million. And Teddy may get the last slap because he's still in the league, but the point was somebody went out of their way to chop his money up.
Well, it seems like it's like stages of denial to a certain extent, but it goes to a different way. Maybe like say a failed drug test, or they didn't score a whole lot on the Wonderlic, or teams are shying away from him, and there's no attribution either one of the stories, because it's not supposed to be. It's just put out there to be poison pen for that particular athlete. Now, on the other side, you'll get so-and-so from what's the matter you is moving up on the chart. Now, how do you move up on a subject that hasn't even started yet?
And Tony, let's not forget, we all know agents' influence on certain teams make a big difference.
Exactly. Look, the brother that got caught on the ball on draft, I mean, that was a Mission Impossible style hit that they did on that kid, and it was from within. And yes, 5-6 years later, I still don't know if that was him under that mask. But I digress. But it's those sort of things. You know, you've got your agents that are out there. And again, we mentioned this earlier tonight. Don't think that the XFL, who's basically has it in now with the NFL, it appears to be, that's it. So it's crazy because, you know, you already have the American Idol aspect to it on opening night, where it's just basically the whole town is all by itself. Look, anybody who really is a quote-unquote student of the draft or what have you, the real thing with the draft is always the second and third day, because that's where are built. You know, that 74 Steelers draft It's a mm-hmm. Think about it. Five Hall of Famers came from that. I would have loved, you know, I would have loved to have seen the valuations of that Steeler. I'm willing to bet you that if you dug long enough, you would find somebody that would say, this is a horrible draft.
Yeah, you know, in today's world, they would. Because that's, you know, the discourse and evaluation creates content gets people looking and respond, particularly now with the added factor of social media to really add spice to the menu of craziness that they put out.
So, you know, if I, you know, I want to get full slapping for every person that puts out a monster. I really do. Because, I don't even think Nixon and Trump combined on their worst day could tell more lies in the square inch than those guys do.
We can hear you, bro.
Go ahead
and do it again.
You're going in and out.
I said, how in the hand is Daniel Snyder surviving? All this going on.
We
know that.
Him and Trump, I don't know who's surviving best.
Reggie, do you know why he's surviving? Because if he goes down, some more guys go down. That's why he survived.
There's a definite Nino Brown aspect to this.
No, not
that much. It's like if I'm going down, I'm taking on everybody. And Mike, yes, Hakeem Akbar will become the new owner of the Washington Commanders. although he's still gonna have that hole in the middle of his right hand, from what I can gather.
So which brother on the management staff is going to take a hit for the Washington General? Somebody going to take a hit. I just know it.
To me, it's not obvious, but I mean, you've got to figure Bruce Allen's going to be one.
Bruce Allen, James Bond.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. I guess his stench is still there. That's why I thought he was whatever. Here's the thing. While I think all of us are definitely interested in what's going to happen with the Brian Flores suit, ironically, the real most interesting suit in all of this may be this John Gruden suit. If he names names, you know,
why does
a whole bunch of people going to go down.
What's the nation gonna do, Gary? That's the one, Tony.
Once the Gruden situation gets flushed out, there's a note for that. For that situation, it's called dun 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 dun.
Yeah, really, you can cue up the Perry Mason music then.
Hey, Mike.
Yes, Mike, sir. Did we lose Mike?
Oh, there
you go. No, I'm here.
I told you I wanted to take a little time to discuss them. Give me a minute. Guys, bear me for a second. And preparing for the draft, I contacted one of the guys I used to work with. Who's getting ready to retire? At least I thought he's getting ready to retire until I got his information.
Correct.
One of the things that we had talked about, Tony, and you've probably seen it in regards to putting a team together and making things happen, particularly when it comes to a professional sports or sports period, is the fact, and particularly if you're in administration sports like I was with three teams, we all know what
we don't know what that Friday afternoon happy hour is. You know, most of us go do it because we want to, you know, check out some ass, you know, and some games. Mm-hmm. But when it comes time with a team, while we're doing that, at least when the years I was with the Nets, your ability to get that 5 o'clock happy hour was with some executives. And that's based upon your performance and based upon what they think you can do. And that leads to, you know, a happy hour. But on the happy hour, they're giving you some information that they're testing you and evaluating to see if you can handle it. And if you can handle it, what they do next, they provide you with some phone numbers to begin to lay out the difference between an idea and a plan.
True.
Most folks have an idea, but they don't have a plan. Well, they give if they have you with some numbers, they want you to coordinate the plan and develop it and make it happen. So if you can do that, the next thing, after you get the number, you have to call the number. Call the people that this plan can begin to evaluate and develop, and begin to set the meetings up at an office or with someone or other entities that can make it happen. Once they find that something is viable and it passed the test of your administrators, lawyers, and other particularly marketing people, that's where you go to the conference. The conference that some particular company, marketing company, lawyer's office, where at that point you flush out everything that you need to do to make it happen. But here's the other part of it. The last part of it is this. Once you get all that done, the final decision ain't at the conference room. That's where everything is laid out. The final decision is either at the golf course or the resort. You don't get to go to the resort. Everybody don't get to go to the resort. I went to the resort one time, and I saw how they cross all the T's and dot all the I's, and something happened. Well, I said all that to say this. About 2 weeks ago, they begin to lay out what's important for this upcoming college football season. Here's what happens. The companies, Fox, ESPN, that first week in April, first 6 to 7 days of April, that's when they begin to lay out the college football season. Mm-hmm. And within that, it's the people that have the highest bid for particular networks get the first crack at the best game in college. Well, the person who got the biggest contract this year is Fox. So Fox, the last 2 years, guess what they've done? They've taken the highest rated game that draws the most people at the first game, at the game that they're going to take first whenever it is during the season. And that game this year with the Buckeyes playing those bitches up north of Ohio. All right? They had the highest.
He was talking about Western. He's of course talking about Western Michigan Triple Wars. But go ahead.
Yeah. West of hell. Okay. But in reality, it was the highest rated. It was the most viewed college game outside of the college championship, and not too far behind it. Well, then ESPN takes a game, and it goes back and forth during the season. Alabama playing Auburn, CBS kids. There's a line based upon how much money they put them to take for games, and they fill out the season.
No Jackson State, I can't believe it. How dare they?
Wait, I'm getting there.
They let them have the spring game on, so that's a little bone. That's a little issue bone that they spit through at them.
Okay, I'm getting there. Okay, now we know the layout. So, and getting all this information together and listening, my man who I know told me something, and I said, oh, hell no. He said, hell yes. And here's what it is, guys. You know, the college attendance is down 13% across the country.
But guess what? The viewership of games are up 18 to 20%. Don't let that fool you. Don't let the numbers of attendance fool you, okay? Because of all the viewing that's being shown from regional networks, which the biggest one is SEC, Big Ten. Now, here's what's going on. What's going on is there's going to be an earthquake change in conferences coming. Now, how do I know? Because the person I know was involved with it, he said, Patrick, they are now in the conference stage. They've got the plan. They are planning right now to see what resort is going to be finished at so the general public can know it. And here's what it is basically. Now, we have the SEC, we have the Big Ten, and you have the Pac-12. Pac-12 has Washington, which is a good team, and Stanford. But there's a team that's about to make a move, and I was told this. I'm saying, you got to be out your mind. They said, no, I'm not. There's a possibility of USC joining the Big Ten.
No.
What?
From California?
Did I stutter?
No.
Here's why, gentlemen. Here's why. The contract for the network between SEC and Big Ten and the new package they got. No, a couple years, the package that was made with college football was in the hundreds of millions. This next one is going to be in the bins, and I ain't talking about one or two. What's going to happen now? We've been talking about super conferences. Well, super conferences pushed by guess who? The NIL of players moving to different teams, getting the best matchup. All those teams, they're going to squeeze it down. They're going to squeeze it down to 48 teams in the Super Conference. All right?
Now that makes sense. Now that makes sense. Now that makes sense. Because again, it's about marketing. It's about marketing.
The part that killed me was this. Well, what's that going to do to the Pac-12? Well, the Pac-12, because of their regional deal, is not making enough money to match the Big Ten and ACC. Once the Super Conference comes up, the money share between the Big Ten and the SEC will go from $50 million to $110 to $130 million per team every year.
One for you and one for me.
Operation.
Two for you and one, two for me. Three for you, one, two, three for me.
All right, lastly, and I'll end with this. The teams that we said that won't be the Super Conference or the HBCU schools, don't count them out. Not in the big picture, but the regional networks will expand to include these teams. All the games are made out now. Again, guys, the dots have not been, eyes have not been down and teeth have not been crossed. But the talks are going on. The first move you know what's happening when they announce the change of conferences and who plays. Don't be surprised.
Okay.
And I said,
Patrick, one other question to go with that, and maybe I've already answered by asking this, but how much of the betting angle is involved in moving the needle in regards to this as well?
I was told this much. The question I asked, well, why would USC come to the Big Ten? He said, Pat, think about it. And they hit me like a brick in the face. It's in the Big Ten. But I said, well, you got to keep running this thing. You know why? What's the number one market in the country? New York. If something ever happens to Rutgers, the place in New York and this market will blow up. Look what happened to Little St. Peter's. What happened there?
Yep.
Now, the other part of it is the fact that the Pac-10 is having some money problems, and the money problems won't let everybody in. So the Super Conference, how they put together, when they can put together, I don't know. And I'll end with this. I'll say this, and the reason why this formula works because the NFL is the king of ratings, the crown prince.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Hey, but Patrick, what is the significance in Patrick? That's my question.
So what?
What does Notre Dame fit in? They got the NBC network to the
show. Guess what it is. Guess what
was the second most wanted game this year after the Michigan game against Ohio State.
Probably Notre Dame, Clemson, maybe.
No.
Notre Dame is
no. The first game that ESPN took after was, guess what? Notre Dame and Ohio State in September. That was
Sense. Yeah, that makes sense. Is that going to be a neutral site, or are they playing it at the Horseshoe?
Oh, they're playing Columbus. That's their first game. Now, here's a trick on that, guys. Here's a trick. All the top games that was picked, they're all selected already.
The time is done.
And I'll tell you something else. What folks who want to deal with, the move that Dylan made with Jackson State last year will do them good. I couldn't get specific time games, but I was told it did HBCU good. So I don't know what that means. But the guy I talked to, who I know is involved with it, he said what he did, even though they lost, it did the HBCU school. Let's see what happened. What's really happened, if Dylan King the previous year, if he stays, they might get a crack at a Division I team to add to one of those games that they get the first week of it.
I can read that.
But they could play Vanderbilt. Half of them are playing Vanderbilt.
Could be anybody, man. But the killer with me is the package, you put $130 million per team. That's the killer.
What we're talking about are multi-million-dollar elimination games from the very beginning.
You've seen it already.
Crazy.
You see it. And Mike, the fact that SEC and Big Ten are doing something, that's the first sign that I was told that was a clear indication that the conference session started.
Yeah.
When they make the move and stuff, it's when they're going to out to the country club or the resort to finalize.
Talk about light a fire. That is insane. The amount of money that would have to be bet in the beginning of the season before they even get the game two, that is off the charts. Las Vegas is getting a dick hard just thinking about that shit. That's crazy.
And guess what? And Mike, guess who got the games already? Las Vegas. We ain't got them out, but they got them.
Oh, of course. See, what's interesting here is that, look, we've always talked about the five families, but now there's even discord within the five families now. So now they want to cut that slice even bigger for themselves. So this is beyond the Hatfields and McCoys and all this other stuff.
Patrick, the short version of what you're saying is, after this year and maybe the next year, the NCAA will cease to be relevant, except for small mid-major schools.
I can't tell the exact. I was told it's going to happen. They have not made the date this year or next year, but it's going to happen. The foundation's been laid out. Here's why. Let's say Alabama, look at this one. Let's say Alabama goes and plays. That's going to happen. Alabama is going to happen. But let's say Alabama goes and plays USC for a preseason game. One of the things that they take in the context, teams and schools that travel well, guys, that's big money. Really big money. And classic case. The most well-traveled team, one of the most well-traveled teams I've ever seen is Penn State. I told you about, they got those SUVs. They go across the country all the time. What does that do? That brings a whole lot of folks to the game. They know who's going to show up. Those games will be sold out. If the game is sold out, what are the sponsors going to be?
Come on.
Those games.
Listen, can you imagine being a coach?
I'm gonna throw one more thing in. You think Amazon and Google and Apple with what they're doing ain't watching?
Oh yeah. Matter of fact, the thing that the struggle but now is that Apple Plus may get Sunday Ticket. Sunday Ticket is you know even though there's a bunch of free agents out there, football wise, trust, the biggest free agent right now is Sunday Ticket, because everybody in their mama wants that package. And like you said, probably the next biggest package after that will be those college games.
Mm-hmm. And Tony, you know, this is what I'm saying. I like what Dr. Thomas did for HBCU with ESPN, but it's time to get independent and sell your product where someone can bid for your product to expand the distribution of your visuals. Don't depend on them. If Google wants to do it for bigger price, well, we're gonna run a network, but you can be a sponsor. That's what
real.
You gotta do. You cannot depend on ESPN anymore.
When I heard that,
I said, okay, not that I didn't understand, but he laid it out for me. He said, I have more to come when it happens. And guess what? Because of what he told me, he said, Patrick, I was going to retire. I'm going to stay another year too long. So he knows something's going on.
Hey, Patrick, I got a question for you. But this thing with Dwayne Haskins, they said that his wife was on the phone with a 911 operator. You know something about that?
Yeah. That's about all I know. I tried to contact his aunt, but I couldn't. She still has some medical issues, so I backed off again. But that's what I was told. That's what everybody, the scuttlebutt that's out. But I'll put it this way. I'm skeptical. I have some issues with the wife, and I'll leave it at that right now.
They were saying that the police ran out of gas and he was trying to go across to get help, and he was on the phone with his wife, and his wife getting it back home. Never going to watch the operator. This was talking about this now, but just that he's trying to tell him that I can't confirm if it's your husband or not.
I wouldn't doubt that, but you know what? A guy like that ran out of gas.
Patrick,
I'm not going to speculate.
Patrick, to just go back to what you just said, I'm numb at the thought of this. Can you imagine being a Division I head coach, talking to the players in the locker room, saying, all right, all you NIL motherfuckers, you got your separate contracts. You got your money. Now we're playing so-and-so to open the season. Remember what John Gruden said when he was the head coach at Revenge of the Nerds? Get your bowl games and you get your bonuses. I mean, seriously, it's going to be like a fucking corporate financial report. They're going to say straight up, yeah, I ain't got to worry about whether or not you guys are going to play because you're going to play. Now you got to win. If you don't win, our season is ruined. We won't make any more money because this was $1 million spit in the ocean and we went and threw it all in on this one game. That's what's going to be said in several locker rooms across the country. There's going to be this is like the NCAA regionals. These are all elimination games. It's not going to be about number one. It's going to be about surviving advance from Jump Street, only with football, not basketball. This kind of money is beyond Las Vegas. They already know. The line is set. It's just about how much money is going to be met. Holy shit.
Mike, let me put it this way. In basketball, there's already over close to 1,000 moves already, different teams.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Ohio State just moved three players. Two are starters left. One's going to Alabama, one's going to LSU. The reason why they're going because of the fact that we got some freshmen going out playing. But the point is people are moving. And here's an indication, and Tony, you would notice, you like me, we get our football books early. They ain't out yet, fellas.
Yeah, because there's usually at least one out by now, so yeah.
They ain't out. And how do I know? I went to a place to explore them. Barnes & Noble's here in Jersey, they have in a heartbeat. They had none. They only had one. Draft book, that's it.
It's the end of the world as we know it.
Oh, man.
You know what? There's one other thing that we have to bring up, and this has to do with the Liars Club. Now, you know how they'll talk about what's going on in the respective war rooms, but they don't really break down what kind of war they're talking about. All right, take the Giants, for instance. Giants, very conservative team.
Why?
We know they're really white all the way, but they've got a dilemma now. The white guy they invested in, they know he ain't shit. They got a competent black guy to fill in just in case. He's not their starter, but he's just in case. They are worried about Jones regressing to such a degree that they'll have to put Taylor in. Not want to, they'll have to. The Giants don't play like that. They're very conservative. And now they're going to the draft deciding front office-wise who will fit this bill. Now, they had a black general manager before. We were talking about Reggie McKenzie. He made good picks. He helped the team. He helped build them up.
But Jerry Reese?
Yes. He kept their program in place in terms of what they wanted, what they wanted their people to look like, and they were successful. But now, this is a different story because whether they want to admit it or not, the skin game is just as evident to them as it were if they were located in the heart of the fucking South.
Mike,
now,
Mike, let me tell the Giants.
Yes, go ahead.
Mike, the Giants don't pick up two linemen in the first three rounds. Let me tell you, the fan base of Giants here are pissed off. Let me repeat that. The fan base of the Giants are pissed off. They better do something quick.
I believe it. There's no doubt about the fact that the Giants are risking the base of their foundation to get better. And they know they have to get better. They only won 7 games in 2 years. So anything they do would seem to be an improvement. But the ownership still will say it whether they want to admit it or not. We need white stars. We need white guys. Now, you think you were hearing that, but it's the truth.
Mike, let me ask Fred the question. Fred, what's the temperature? What's the temperature of having Baker Mayfield supposedly coming to Carolina?
Oh,
there is none.
shall we say it's like Pittsburgh playing at home in the wintertime, or so it's like the Pittsburgh-Cleveland rivalry. It don't matter which place you play late in the season, it's going to be cold. It's cold. Several teams have already come out and said, we don't want him. Of course, they don't want one of the guys either, so it's a toss.
Because they got they sent Donald there, who ain't that bad but play bad.
They're trying to find a focus them to ship him.
I agree, because I think that pick, Carolina pick, is going to dip in the draft. Personally, I think that's going to dip in the draft.
Carolina would do better by going to one of the HBCUs and getting a quarterback of what they got and what they may get with the major.
Speaking of that, anything more on Angel? Angel Angel, the black quarterback from, oh, God, what school?
Liberty?
Angel, the quarterback. I don't have my notes here. Oh, that's
Liberty.
No, not Willis. Willis from Liberty. Oh, gosh. I'll get back with you. I had notes on him. I can't find my notes because I wanted to ask you last week because he was going to get he's projected to get a legitimate look with the team. He's letting the kid's name Engel, 6'5", about 230.
Not ringing a bell.
Okay. I'll find the notes.
Patrick, remember after past 55, you take notes. don't ask me how I know.
or at least have a pad and pen nearby.
Well, I can't find them. Can't find them. They're another file.
That's that stage when you got your glasses on top of your head and you said,
"You took my glasses. Stop playing with me. Who took my glasses?"
Well, you see that commercial too.
And Mike, by the way, I just want to throw this out because it's great content. We're talking about the draft, but and I think I kind of Facebook read a little bit on this. Bomani Jones had a show on HBO that's spitting fire on people.
Yes.
Lord have mercy.
Woo! Well,
and he did something last week that just go on YouTube and go watch it. If you want to know how the NFL works, when someone tells you, actually someone told me years ago when I worked in NBA, that NBA is a small business. It's a small business. What are you talking about? This is what they're talking about. If you go connect all the people, and that's what Bomani did, all the coaches that are offspring of individuals that were former coaches or executives, he calls them all, it's like a crossword puzzle. It was phenomenal. And he pointed them all out, and they had a chart of them. It's a great commentary on why the league is the way it is, and why certain people get jobs and why certain folks don't.
What is it, 11:30 on Sunday night, right?
Yeah. Oh, man, he's phenomenal. He's phenomenal. He's phenomenal.
I'll have to give it a look.
Yeah. Bomani is spit fire, brother.
It's a good watch.
I hope he can last.
You know what? Look, there's a perfect example of someone who was under wraps with the mic, and once he was able to... Once he found his voice, you know, I'm going to mention now he's probably enjoying his everything that he's doing now. He's here to the Christians of what the mouth is.
By the way, I talked to Mike earlier this evening about this. The thing I mentioned about 2 weeks ago about the Miami Dolphins has... The smoke has come out where Tom Brady is involved with the Dolphins as a potential minority owner, and he says he's going to retire. He says he's going to retire, and the reason why, first of all, why he's intertwined with the Miami Dolphins. Oh, he said he's building a home there, but I don't doubt that. That's solidified. But the reason why he's definitely intertwined with the Miami Dolphins because a guy that he knows well, real world, like one of his homies, asked him to come along because he might have problems. That guy's name, Stephen Ross. Why does he know Stephen Ross so well? Because he and Stephen Ross have a kinship in two colors, blue and gold. Stephen Ross is the highest donor of money to you to them bitches up north that he's involved with.
Again, we want to emphasize that he's talking about the Western Michigan Triple, not the maize and gold guy. Trust me.
So,
Patrick wouldn't do such a thing.
No, yeah, we do that show. So what happens is. Brady could possibly be a minority owner, another minority along with J Lo and the Williams girls, and a whole bunch of other people. But he'd have a hand in the front of it. And if he couldn't find a quarterback, guess who played quarterback for a year to draw attention? I thought it was BS, but now it's solidified. He said, well, it didn't really happen. And all of a sudden, he goes back to the Bucks. But it's coming.
But, you know, how about the fact that Venus and Serena have a piece of Dolphins, and they ain't got to do nothing but kick back and rest and dress. And everybody else
ain't mad at them.
Who hate on them, who are critical of them, who tries to give them shade, all of them are sitting broke in comparison to what the Williams women have accumulated. And, like, you know, revenge is always best served successful, not served cold. You know, revenge is best served when you're successful. And they are successful. So Serena can say, okay, y'all didn't give me that last title. I guess I just take a rest on this pile of money. So fuck y'all. And she's right, because that money will make money, and her kid will have legacy cash, which is what in society everybody supposedly clamors for. Never mind reparations, never mind everything else. It's money that's been willed to you. That's the key. That's how old money gets to be older money. And her kids experience old money. That's a big difference from everybody else being, as Chris Rock likes to say, wealthy, but not rich, but not wealthy.
There's a big difference between being rich and being wealthy.
I can actually hear Michael Douglas pointing his finger at Little Stevens while we saw Little Martin.
Matter of fact, you don't see wealthy people; they're just there.
All right. One last aspect of the draft before we go to final thoughts. Now, like you said, it used to be localized in New York, and now they've taken it on the road. You know, it's not a question of whether it was a good idea or not to take it on the road, because now they got cities fighting for rotations to get the draft. What I'm asking about has to do now with the fact that the so-called sanctity of this is gone, because in Las Vegas, they'll be betting on who's the odds-on favorite to get drafted first.
Yes.
Who's first to get traded, or which teams are first to make a move? There will be prop bets flowing like ripples. And we know that the NFL will get drunk off of this. 3 days and a whole lot of money made. Who do you think will be the team to explain it the most?
Good question. Well, now, is this the year they're in Vegas? Now, they're in Vegas this year, right? Or is it this year?
They're in Vegas this year.
Why not the Raiders?
Money going to be flowing to Las Vegas like Niagara Falls in the summertime, bro.
It's going to be like a Super Bowl party.
Mike, you may even get a Rat Pack sighting at this point in time right now.
It's going to be like the Super Bowl. They will be importing ass from everywhere.
It's
Latin
Lord.
Ass.
Yes, Lord.
Asian ass. No matter who ass. It's going to be ass up in there somewhere. And they're going to be flowing.
As my boy said, the host convention.
You can almost hear Robert Duvall. I love the smell of you know what in the morning.
No joke.
Yes, Lord.
So, Gary, I got to ask you this, because the Super Bowl will be coming your way next year.
That's right.
Just how hard do you think the Raiders are prepared for this? What do you think they'll do that will cause a splash or make everybody say, what the hell's going on in this draft?
They need another wide receiver and a running back. I don't know how they're going to get it, because they have nothing to trade.
They've already invested in Cleveland, but how much more will they invest? What else will they have to do?
Well, one thing they did, they solidified yesterday.
Get the Steelers out of their schedule.
They reinvested in the cornerback from so they put money in him, which is good. But we need to get one more established receivers, some defensive people, and that's, you know, at that point, that's all I can say, because of the fact that because we don't have that many draft picks this year, I don't know what Barry's going to do. But we got the quarterback, and Deshaun wasn't the Browns' camp yesterday. Guess who wasn't? To get ready. So that's more important to me than, you know, see what kind of rookie we're going to get.
I hear you. Now, right next door, Fred, do you think they will pressure your Steelers to take Baker Mayfield off your hands, or are you all right as you are?
I wrote that.
Well, as far as Miss Mayfield goes, he can stay where he is. You know, my previous comment was, you know, what can the Browns do? And that's, you know, just so they don't have to face the Steelers twice. But having said that, he's not a good fit for the way the Steelers play.
I agree.
One of the things that you got to consider about the Steelers, and they partially addressed it last year, but they got to get they need another big hard running back, because the mentality of the Romans has not changed. You win football games by running the ball.
I agree.
You can get ahead throwing, but then once you're ahead, you maintain by running the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Go down the list. My homeboy played up there, Parker, who was not good enough to run for University of North Carolina, even as a senior. But somehow or another, he made it to the NFL and did well for as long as he played. And he's set for life. But having said that, you know, the thing to consider with the Steelers is they run the ball on offense, and then most receivers catch the ball, and that's important. But at the same time, you know, their real job is blocking for the running game. And then they got to bolster. They got to solidify their front line on defense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think they're good. They're good at DB. They're good at linebacker, but they got to do something about them. They got to do something about that front line. When they lost Harris, they lost inside and out, because he basically covered the whole side of the field, because he made his guard and tackle drop back, keep him off the quarterback. And but now Miss Mayfield, I'm sorry. I mean, this guy they got supposedly as a new quarterback, that's I don't see them winning with him. I don't see them winning with him quarterback.
Coach Tom
got to coach his ass off. As I've said before, when he came out of college, he wasn't even the best quarterback in the state of North Carolina. So the fact that he's here now, between him and that red beard, I forget where he's played, but he's changed Wentz, the redhead.
Hey, Patrick, got a question. Make sure that problem, one black head coach and a brother, a black quarterback, replaces that. What the hell does that think that you don't respect another black coach?
One of the things that Baker has to come and realize is the fact that, you know, how we say about high school players when they project themselves, you might not be as good as you think you are.
He got lost in the fact that I was picked number one and in the draft, and I'm a starter. And my response to that is, and? Which lends to his constant running his mouth about being disrespected. And wait a minute, if you were that good, they'd have kept you. Mm-hmm. I mean, you were not the top play in the draft as it was. That's a move that the other GM made. Anybody said that? Are you crazy? You should have taken Deshaun Watson. He didn't. So come back. The chickens come home the roost. So he has to realize that he has. And my man on ESPN, Swagger said it best. When you begin to hum yourself, you'll get better.
No, mm-hmm. That's right.
There you go. Mike, hell hath no fury like a slightly pissed off white man.
For real. Tony, I know you are still Oilers / Titans, so what do you think they have to do?
Well, put it this way. If they can find a way that Ryan Tannehill can get his head caught in a large can of Van Camp's pork, I think they'll be all set.
That's cold.
I could have said Hunt's ketchup, but I figured I'd give a little bit of room. So
that's
can,
true. That's true. I've worked with that.
They win in spite of him. So
This is true. Reggie, what about Washington? Y'all got Carson Wentz, and you know how I feel about him. The boy!
Trying to get the train with my own. Follow through with the bird. Follow through with the action. Just try it again. Just try it again.
You know the boy? That's right.
Reggie has this death wish that he wants to see a man die on national radio of cancerism.
Have brain aneurysm.
Yeah.
How dare me? I'm sorry, Gene. How dare me? Somebody got no time.
Like Washington don't know nothing. I disagree, especially quarterback. But y'all can have Carson Wentz. Good luck with him, I say. Although Heineke might have something to say about that. Having said that, let's get to the final
thoughts. He's going as far as he can go. Heineke's going as far as he can go. And quietly kept Rivero, if he don't do it this year, his ass might be on the hot seat next year.
We can only hope. And as they're wiping their hands, he might as well start on final touch. Come on with it.
Well, you know, it's amazing to me that the Klansmen that gunned down the innocent brother down there in Georgia. Simpson has been moved to August. I say, wow. It's like, it's amazing to me again that a person can sell a cigarette and the cop, you know, say, I'm the executioner. But that's January 6th. Well, that was a little sightseeing story. So that was a big one. But yet we got a fool that's in charge of the Republican Party in Virginia attacking the Delta. Talking about, they're going to run the government. I'm like, these guys are really just stirring up any kind of racial animosity that they can. And, by the way, the governor of Virginia said that if anybody's teaching racism in the schools, we want to have a hotline where you can snitch and tell them. I'm like, really? You know, we got global warming, we got gas engine going up, and we got all these problems, plus a war between us, money that's going to leave the pockets of Americans that really need it now. So COVID-19, and by the way, the numbers COVID going up, where you met. And by the way, I'm just still shaking my head about the CAA, garbage in our HBCU. Now, Professor said before, you got to learn how to raise money. When Hampton and somebody Jones turned on his show, you guys want to build a stadium, but yet you got dorms with mushrooms and rat and roach infested. Yeah, how's that working out for the athletic department?
Well, at least the Rams have something to eat. With the mushrooms, I guess. So that's a good thing.
So we'll say again, it's amazing how the HBCUs can have all these doctoral degrees and all these great degrees, but can't figure out how to keep our youth and dorm. It's just really amazing. But what do I know? I'm just old poor.
There you go. Well said. Patrick?
You know, it's baseball season. And, you know, as a kid, my first love is baseball. And my best friend is back to the baseball. But my love for football was, you know, it overtook me to this very day. But baseball is still as a pastime for me because also was attached to my closest to my dad. My dad, Shadow, loved baseball. Loved sitting watching the games with my dad. I missed that with him, even though he was a Dodger fan until they moved. But he loved it, and I still have a passion for baseball. Not like I used to for football and other sports, but I still do. But one of the things that bothers me about baseball is that they don't give respect to Curt Flood and what he did and sacrificed for these guys making $200 million contracts. Unbelievable amounts of money, and I ain't mad at him because the owners are making. If someone had spoken to somebody recently about the Rangers got all the money, I said, guys, if the owners weren't making it, they wouldn't be paying it. All right,
thank you.
That's the first thing. And I've worked for teams that, please, but I'm pissed off that these guys do not get the respect that Kirk Flood should get. He should be in the Hall of Fame. His impact that he had on still to this day on this league, making that sacrifice is unequivocal. It should be it's a shame that's not there, and I hope someday that can happen. I talked about it recently on my TV show. I made it very, very plain that Lord knows I got three heroes beside my dad. One is Malcolm X, the other is John Coltrane, and the other one is Jackie Robinson. But Kirk Flood's going to be in that list, too, because what he did for baseball.
Absolutely.
Well said. And happy upcoming birthday, because yours is a day before mine. I'll be getting as sweet like I will.
I'll be 21 again.
Yes, indeed.
Wait, Mike, my lady said, and my brother said, again and again.
Now, if you add that up and carry the two, you may get the exact number in there somewhere.
Come on, that's right. Professor, I don't know if you like pound cake or not, because I think you're a pineapple upside down cake man, but give us something for the pot.
Hey, pineapple is good upside down, right side up, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
First of all, I mentioned last week the upcoming Black College World Series, which will be held
in
Montgomery on the weekend of May 11th through 7th to the 15th. Feature schools, Division II, as well as junior high schools. This is being put on in part, the main part of the BCSN network, along with some others in the local tourism organization. You can go to Black College Nine and get all the details, time and schedule to be posted, I think, next week for the actual games. Also, condolences to the family of the young man and for the possible up-and-coming skill quarterback. Nobody should go out that way. And lastly, I'm almost finished with the book on HBCU basketball. And I had someone ask me again that infamous question. Why do you keep separating the history because it's just history? I said, I separate because it was separated when it occurred. white folks need to learn that that there was something going on the other side of the curtain, whether you liked it or not, whether you pushed it or not, because it also shows that we learned how to do certain things for ourselves. God gave us 120-plus HBCUs at one time or another, and we still got 100 left now. And so we still got to tell, this is another situation where we have to tell our own story, because if you follow ESPN, nothing happened before 1979. Well, unfortunately, a lot happened, and this is the kind of thing you got to know about. And I have filed the incorporation papers to help kickstart the museum that's going to be built around that book, as well as the one on football, as well as the one on women's basketball. One of the founders of Black College Nine is actually releasing a book on baseball for HBCU, so we're not going to do baseball. We're going to upgrade the book we did on track and field. That'll be starting sometime in probably June or July. So you can order books by going to www.blackheritagereview.com, and all the books can be up short.
Yes, indeed. Put some black history on the coffee table, under the tree, on your nightstand. Reading Fundamental, we love it. Big G, come on in here.
The Oakland A's had opening day last week. 17,000 people came to the game.
That many?
Lowest number in 45 years.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly baseball, shame on you to allow this to happen. And again tonight, of 11,500.
Yes.
You can't keep doing this. Sometimes it changes.
But
let me clear it up, just set my soul, just set my soul on fire.
Here we go. 1 o'clock Saturday afternoon. And there may be a music box if I get this thing right.
Yes, indeed. There will be a music box because for the second year in a row, Love Madness will prevail. As Gary and I will go to work and get things together for year two of our tournament. We'll be starting in the East, and Sunday, the elimination will begin in round one. The Delphonics, the number one rank in the East, will go up against Family Circle. The Moments.
No contest.
Okay.
Well, it's 1-16, of course.
Blue Magic will go up against the Choice Four. The Intruders will go up against the Commodores. The Main Ingredients will go up against the Whatnots.
Black Eyed Peas
will go up against the Ebonies. And the Dramatics will go up against Tavares. That's the East region.
Definitely.
Come. Check out. You can get some book, Love Madness. I think 9 p.m. 7 p.m. depending on when Gary can get started. We'll be doing it well. And we y'all don't have to beg. We'll let the men beg for you. Having said that, T-Matt, what you got to say?
Well, citing the 4th, 5th, and 6th Amendments, and also getting counsel from my lawyers, Mr. Met, Mrs. Met, and Baby Bastard Met, I must say that I will not comment on the National League affiliate from Flushing until Met. Been approached by many people to ask me this and saying no. I have to adhere to my lawyers and my counsel, which I will not be commenting on the team until I just wanted to put that out there.
Well, Tony, they're playing well, pitching well.
I'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
Because it's just this way. It's way too early. You know, it's way too. You know, 2 weeks is not a full.
Back in a week. That'll be a month.
Mike, see, you want to go out early the season is? Ozzie Albies leads the league in home runs.
A little early.
Just a little. Although, on the flip side, you know who has the high, you know what team has the highest ERA?
Who?
Texas Rangers.
There you go.
Tony, question. How much wasted money did they spend on Gerrit Cole and the Yankees? How much wasted money is that?
I'm even willing to give him a pass because it's early. But see, the bigger question is, why didn't they spend their money on other people? He's your marquee guy. You still don't have a Robin or an Aqualad, I guess, in this case. Severino is basically a step away from, being hurt. Then afterwards, it's a crappy. Yeah, they have a great bullpen. They're not going to need it because none of their time go more. But even with all that being said, it's very early.
Okay, this is true. Come back in another couple of months and let's see if the story continues. Having said that,
in a couple of months, the Pirates will be selling all their players.
It's even too early for the Pirates. It's even too early for the Pirates.
No, they're not going to be gone by the 4th of July.
Oh, boy. That's saying something. I have a drink on that one. And having said that, we will close up tonight. Love Madness. This Sunday, Gary Norris Gray and the Great of a Cool Saturday afternoon. Come on, let's hear it. Go say, stay safe and be safe.